This episode is sponsored by Hulu. The reality queen herself, Lisa Vanderpump, has a new home on Hulu and has teamed up with them to bring you the newest, most exciting reality series yet, Vanderpump Villa. In an escape to the French countryside, Lisa and her staff work, live, and play together 24/7 while dealing with rivalry, romance, and misadventures. The series offers first-class luxury with world-class drama. Watch new episodes of Vanderpump Villa every Monday, now on Hulu. Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture. From the classic reality TV moments of the past and present, to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome to an all-new episode of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal Ryan, and this is your Monday episode. So the last time I talked to you guys was on Thursday. It feels like a year has passed. My goodness. I love that it really does feel like there's so much time has passed. And then I was like, oh, wait, I guess I just released the last episode on Thursday. So just to catch everybody up, my grandma passed away last week. I was in Columbus, Ohio with my dad and my sister and taking care of arrangements and everything. It has just been quite a last 4 or 5 days. But anyway, we'll get into that at another time. Well, in fact, we'll get into it today after that. So usually we do a pop culture roundup on Monday, but I was not able to do that just because I was spending time with my family and things like that. But have no fear. We still have an amazing guest. We have Carlos King. We have a legend with us who has not only worked in reality television, producing some of our favorite housewife shows like Jersey and Atlanta. And we have great conversations about all that. But he has his podcast, Reality with the King, and he has a live tour coming up, which we talk all about. But then after that, I have my dad, Bill Bailey, with a little bit of a check-in. And, you know, there's some laughs, but we talk about a lot of serious stuff. So that's right after Carlos. So that's, you know, sometimes that's not everybody's thing. So just feel free to skip it if you're not in the mood to hear my dad and me just yap it up about about life. So anyways, we're going to get right into this. I am exhausted. We'll be back to a normal schedule. Shout out to my Patreon peeps, the baddies over there. Thanks for your patience. I wasn't able to release a Patreon episode this weekend just because of everything that happened, but I will make it up to you guys because that episode of Summer House, I loved it. And also I got to do a recap of The Valley last week, which I didn't get to on Friday because of all of this. And it was a great episode of The Valley, but we'll get all to that. There's plenty of time to get to all of that. The most important thing is that you start your week right and that you have a great week ahead of you. Man, in Ohio, all everybody can talk about is this damn eclipse that is happening today. Like they're selling these glasses and t-shirts at every store we went into. I mean, it is, I had no idea the eclipse was that big of a draw. Anyways, hope everybody has a happy eclipse. Remember, do not look directly at the eclipse. That is bad for you and your eyes. And it sounds like something that I would do if I was not warned. So just that's a tip right off the bat. Do not look directly into the eclipse. Let's get right into our interview with Carlos King. There are timestamps. And then after that, we'll go into Bill Bailey for a quick little conversation about this last couple of days and this last year. So everybody, I love you. Thanks for always, you know, being here for me and for my family, and be here for Carlos King. I hope you guys really enjoy this. It was really, I've wanted to talk to him for so long. So this was really, really such a treat for me. You can tell how excited I am getting to talk to him. So I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. We did this about like 9 days ago. And so I'm happy to release it now. I would have released it later in the week, but I wasn't able to do the pop culture roundup. So we'll get to all that. Anyways, enough of me qualifying things. Here he is, the one, the only, Carlos King. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to So Bad It's Good, presented by Betches Media. Today, our guest talks about the power of prayer and talks about manifesting. And I feel like I have manifested this. I have wanted to speak to this gentleman for years now. He is an icon in the shows that we love. He cut his teeth early on by producing shows that we dearly love, seasons of Real Housewives of New Jersey, Real Housewives of Atlanta, and then took that to the next level where he has his own production company. And now he puts his stamp on all of these shows that we love over on OWN, Love and Marriage, all those franchises, WeTV, Bold and Bougie, but there's even more. He is also at the top of his game in podcasting. His hit podcast, Reality with the King. I mean, these are amazing episodes. I just listened to the one about the Potomac news this week. Just fantastic. But not just that, he is now taking it on tour, just like Beyonce, Reality with the King live tour. There were sold out shows earlier in January, and now there's going to be a whole run of shows coming up in April. You got Jersey with Teresa Giudice. You've got Atlanta with Tamar Braxton. You've got Irvine, California with Teddy, and Washington, D.C. with the cast of Love and Marriage D.C. Man, this guy is a legend. The one, the only, Carlos King. Carlos, thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me. That's a great intro. Awesome. Listen,
and also a shout out to the raindrops out there if you're listening for the first time. I really got to say, you really have your pulse on all of this. You also have such a production language that you're able to take us behind the scenes and kind of put two and two together. And I think, you know, mend those gaps that the audience sometimes doesn't understand. Was there any trepidation on doing a podcast or even into a live tour of almost kind of revealing sometimes how the sausage is made?
There absolutely was tons of trepidation, which is why it took me years to agree to do a podcast. Because as you know, the podcast industry has been out for many, many, many years. It's now becoming super popular. But I've been approached to do podcasts back in 2018, 19, and I never felt the time was right. And if I'm being completely honest, I wasn't comfortable or confident to talk about my opinions on the genre that I love so much, because I didn't want to offend people. I did not want certain people to think that I'm biased. So I was very afraid to do it.
Well, Carlos, the fan base is really normal. There's no reason to be afraid. We're a completely normal group of people that you shouldn't be scared of, LOL.
Right? No, that's the thing. You know, there's no such thing as social media trolls. You know, the fan base, they're not, you know, as aggressive with their commentary. No, you have nothing to worry about. What are you talking about? So it wasn't until 2021 that I said, I think I'm ready. And I'm so glad I said it, because it's been a fun ride. And it's nice to have a producer who worked on some of your favorite shows during those iconic moments of Teresa flipping the table, or NeNe Leakes and Kim Zolciak. It's nice to have somebody speak to those moments, but also have credibility in this business. So it's been fun.
Yeah. You're what we call a reliable narrator. I always call it like the term reliable narrator, because, and there's one reliable narrator on every reality show. I think they're really, those are like key components of a reality show. And you're that in terms of this business. I mean, I was just listening to that Potomac one you did this week, and there were just so many little moments that I hadn't even thought of that I was like, oh, this is brilliant in terms of, you know, in terms of Mia. You're saying, Mia, this is her moment. You know, Mama Mia, you said, this is her moment. And I love the way you looked at it as this is an opportunity, even though you're sad about Candace leaving. And you had three people that you were like, even before these announcements were made, you're like, I think three people should be leaving. And now we got the announcement, one official and one unofficial, of Robin and Candace leaving. You spoke very highly of Candace, and you said something that I didn't even think about, is that, you know, she might be even expanding her brood. Who knows? I mean, she's killing it in the music industry, but I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, listen, Candace is who I call a force multiplier, right?
Explain to the audience what that is. I love when you say that.
Yes, okay. So the force multiplier, Ryan, is the person on a reality show, let's say female, It is the female on a reality show who is able and capable of bringing energy into the room and asking tough questions, pulling material out of people, shifting conversations. It's a very important job. So the force multipliers of our fan favorites are like NeNe Leakes, Kyle Richards, you know, Teresa Giudice. It's they're normally called the queen bee of the show, but we're all inclusive here, so all of them are queens. So I call them the force multiplier, and that's exactly who Candace is. And she so funny and so talented. And to me, Ryan, a quintessential housewife, a woman that comes from money, a pageant girl, married a man who makes
on
less
the come
money.
Up. Yeah.
Yes, on the come up. That's a great way of saying it. On the come up. And I love Chris Bassett. He's so nice and he's such a good character on the show as well. So to know that we don't have this wordsmith on the show anymore, at least like she said, for the time being, it is a missing element. And I do think, Ryan, we're going to feel the loss of Candace next season.
But it's a group setting with the housewives. And if these ladies are not being able to participate in effective conversations with her anymore, I see that there is a time and place. I really was shocked to hear it. But after watching this season or watching parts of this season, because I thought it was dreadfully slow at times, unfortunately, but it's like it's like sports teams. Like, you love it regardless. Like, I'm going down with any ship, but that's the weird thing. But then on the other hand, Robin, why do you think that hasn't officially been announced yet? You made a point that this was released by the Jasmine brand and that they were very shady, and that usually it'll be like sources say. They said production sources say. And I was cracking up that you pointed that out, because that means somebody at Bravo. But why don't you think we haven't got an official announcement? Has Robin not woken up yet to make the official announcement? What's going on here?
Well, she's awake. Ryan, you are so funny. Robin is not in REM sleep right now. She's wide awake. No, listen, Ryan, we're talking about housewives here. So Robin is not trying to attach her moment onto Candace's week, right?
Yeah, okay. Yes.
I mean, Ryan, we're still talking about...
You got
about
a people exclusive with Dave Quinn. I mean, like, come on. Yeah.
I know, my buddy, my pal. So... Listen, I 100% believe Robin isn't coming back next season. I believe the rumor is true. But Robin, and listen, I agree with her. I will never attach my situation to another cast member. So this was Candace's week to reveal her moment. And I think Robin may confirm it next week. She wants the Candace dust to settle. The interesting part, though, Ryan, is I'm not sure Robin may get the same social media reaction that Candace got.
Yeah, I don't think so. And by the way, my heart goes out to Robin, because even though I don't think she's the most dynamic character, you know, you do grow, you do learn to, you live with these people. We watch them in our homes week in, week out, the family, the want of it all, you know, and I'm like, where does that story go from here? But I do think it's a fascinating decision, because I'm so curious, just like this season with Erica Jane and Lisa Rinna, I can't wait to see Giselle on her own a little bit and see how that affects the other relationships.
Oh my God, it's music to my ears to know that Giselle has to form real relationships with these women and not rely on the crutch that was Robin Dixon. So I call them Batman and Robin. Obviously, Batman is Robin and Giselle is Batman. So you have to break the group. I mean, Destiny's Child even broke up and Beyonce became a big solo star.
So, wait, so you think potentially Robin has a Cowboy Carter in her? Is that what you're saying?
Well, she is riding off to the sunset now, Ryan, you know, now that she got the pink slip. So it's an opportunity for Giselle to show that she has what it takes to be a solo star, in the sense of not having her background singer Robin Dixon there to sing her ad-libs.
Would you be able to say the third person you speculate about? You have not said the third person that you speculate about. Who would be the third person in your mind? Are you able to say that yet? For the raindrops and the baddies. I know you would probably want to save that for your show, but I was very curious who the third one would be for you.
I'll say this. I had three. Candace was not on my list at all. So I'm okay. Being very honest about that. I want to see first though, Ryan. I have to watch the first two parts, not all three. Give me until the first two parts of the reunion, and by the second part, I can tell you who will be leaving. I have an idea, but
is she a doctor? Let's just say,
no.
Okay.
No. So my good friend Teddy Mellencamp and Tamara Judge, they want Dr. Wendy to leave. I disagree wholeheartedly. I love Dr. Wendy. I know there's people out there who don't, and that's fine. I don't think she's going to be dismissed, and I don't want her to be dismissed. I'll give you a hint. This person is sitting on the end of a couch.
Okay, great. That's perfect. We got it. Okay. Well, listen, from a production standpoint, you just brought up the interesting thing about watching the reunion and how much are careers made and lost at reunions after a season? Have you seen them, you know, like come back? I think we've all seen them like, wow, really good reunion performance. Is that a big part of a housewives thing? And sometimes do housewives get into their minds thinking, I got to keep my job. And so they throw out a bunch of stuff. I mean, we've seen props now being brought out all the time. I mean, is it getting ridiculous? Or do you think the right amount of pressure should be put on a reunion performance?
It is getting a bit ridiculous. You know, I come from the school of organic moments when Kenya Moore got the fan and she was the first woman to bring a prop. And then next season, she brought the bullhorn. I know that the reunion is the Super Bowl. For these housewives, it's your Tom Brady moment, right? You want to win, and you know that if you aren't giving your best performance per se, then more than likely you're on the chopping block. So it is important. That's why, Ryan, you see these women act so crazy at reunions and desperate because. You know, listen, let's talk about it. On Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I think we saw Dorit and Crystal behave in a way that was like, okay, you want your job back.
Yeah, Crystal came to play, yeah.
Yeah, Crystal was like, I need this job and I don't want to be without it. So although I'm boring 98.1% of the time during the season, I'll make up for it at the reunion. And even Dorit, who I used to love so much, when she
had a slump.
Yeah, when she revealed Kyle's personal text messages where Kyle is like, I don't want to fight with you. Like, we're really friends. And in Kyle's defense, Ryan, we didn't see Dorit and Kyle argue all season. So in Kyle's defense, it's like, let's focus on what happened during the season. Me and you are in a weird place, but let's figure it out. Not that moment. So to add insult to injury and to fucking add sense to what Kyle is saying, confirming it, you reveal what she said to you to Erica Jayne, and then Erica Jayne, who I love, is like, that's manipulation. So yeah, it was a performance of getting her job back.
Well, listen, I want to tell the audience, you're one of the top unscripted reality TV show producers, according to The Hollywood Reporter. So as a producer of all of these shows now, and you've seen how history has been made, as a producer, wouldn't you be like, yeah, Dorit, give me that text message. I love it. Like, as a producer, you for want sure. those moments, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, the good thing about my podcast, Reality with the King, is the fact that, Ryan, I'm able to wear two hats, right? It's the producer hat. So you're 1,000% correct. As a producer, if I ask you, like, well, girl, since you brought it up, can I get those receipts? Absolutely. Let me show it to my audience. Now, as a human being, right?
Yeah.
I thought what Dorit did was so deplorable. But as a producer, I thought it was great for the show. So
yeah,
that's the beauty of it.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's what they get. A lot of people get frustrated with too, is that, you know, the Real Housewives, if you look back at OC, it almost looks like a documentary that would win an Oscar now. Like, but now it looks like the X-Men, like everybody's just like, I mean, it's wild. You've seen what the changes like that they've all gone through, and they really are playing at such a level. Like it's Housewives on steroids. Yeah. But I want to know, I think that's the change too, is that sometimes I want to know that these people do have real relationships. I want to see those real relationships. And that's why, to your point, when you were talking about the Mia Gordon scene at the very end, where even production got involved, you get goosebumps. Like the audience knows this is real. This is messy. This is sloppy. This is not scripted in a sense. And I want more of those real moments. I think that's the thing that we're watching now is Kyle, who is like one of my OG favorites. But I also will say, Kyle seems like she has a full-time job trying to keep off storylines off the show. Like it seems like she is. And that's the thing as the audience is now we're using your podcast. We're using other shows to fill in those blanks because we feel that something is not right. We feel that. And that Dorit thing was a perfect example of they do have a real relationship. Just Kyle doesn't want to show that part of it on the show. Do you like that part is sometimes frustrating as an audience member.
Oh, it's super frustrating. One thing about The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which, listen, I love the show, they struggle a lot with being open. We've seen that. We've seen it, obviously, with Kyle dealing with her divorce. We still don't know what Mauricio did to...
That's buying Beverly Hills Season 3, Carlos. That's where we're going to find
out.
I know.
You know what's so funny, Ryan? I'm on episode 4. No, 5. So I'm getting closer, hopefully.
Oh, to episode nine is when a lot of stuff goes down, and I binged it all last week, and I said I wasn't going to do it. And then I was like, wow, I was kind of fascinated that I was like, I feel like I was learning more about the Umanskis than I did on Beverly Hills. And to me, that was fascinating. But as a producer, would you have been enraged if you worked on Beverly Hills and saw this coming out in a certain way that you were not able to control the narrative anymore?
Absolutely. Now, don't spoil it for me, Ryan. I'm going to finish it.
They split up. They split up. I hate to spoil to you. They split up. Yeah.
Okay, as long as I know that part. No, listen. If I was a Bravo executive, I would not be happy because you know what it was for me, Ryan? Watching Kyle in a different light. She seemed... Let me know if you agree with me. She seemed way more relaxed, way more comfortable,
way
more herself, so likable, so refreshing. Mauricio is actually like a fun guy. He looks amazing.
Yes.
He looks so great. And I'm like, it's taking me to watch Buying Beverly Hills to know more about the Umanskis versus the show that Kyle has been on for 10 plus seasons. I would definitely be pissed.
Well, just even as a viewer, I was like, Bravo's my home team. I feel like I'm cheating on my home team here. But you're right. Like Mauricio's out there. He's like, love Bean. Let's party it up in Aspen. Yeah, love Bean. Like it is so different. And I'm not saying it's a perfect reality show because it isn't. It's just very interesting. And in this day and age, I talk about 360 viewing. It's not just the show anymore. It's like being on Twitter. It's being on your podcast. It's reading Dave Quinn's book, Not All Diamonds and Rosé. It's all of these things that the viewer has to like, oh, like a VR experience. I do want to talk about your show because you like there's a million questions I want to ask you. You are a legend. Right. But like in terms of your live show, why bring this to the stage? What do you bring to the stage? You already have this amazing energy. You have amazing guests. What can we expect if we get a ticket?
Yeah. So when you get a ticket, go to my website, Kingdom Reign, REIGNENT.com. That's King.
And all that information is going to be in the show notes. I'll also put it in the Instagram and all that stuff when we release this.
Yeah. So please look into that. But Ryan, it's a party. I call it sort of like an after hours in West Hollywood. meets Vegas, right? We have a live DJ, food, drinks, and what you're getting at my Reality with the King live tour, you're going to see your favorite reality star in a different light. Just like we talked about seeing Kyle Richards in a different light on Netflix because she doesn't have to worry about these other women coming for her relationship. So she's much more at ease. It's that personality and that temperature of easiness that you're going to get out of My Stars with Teresa Giudice, Teddy Mellencamp, Tamara Judge, Tamar Braxton.
Tamar Braxton.
The ladies of Love and Marriage. Yeah. It's really, Ryan, a party. It's a co-ed party. I want husbands to bring their wives and also have fun because we are going to have great conversations. We're going to spill some tea, behind the scenes tea, but also just enjoy these ladies who we've grown to love and to really, at least for an hour and 30 minutes, Ryan, I want the audience to be captivated by the love that I have for them and also the love that they have for me and just seeing like two best friends on stage having a chat.
That's what I was going to say is that it's the relationship also with you. And you know now from like just the podcast, the fandom that you have developed, like it's this really interesting parasocial relationship that gets developed where you have so many new fans that didn't even realize you were doing all of these things. And now you're like, oh my God, I get to listen to this guy two times a week and now go support him with a live show. But what I love is that you do have real relationships with these people. You can bring things out of Teresa that most people can't. You can have conversations with Tamara about production and about things. There's a shorthand language that I wouldn't be able to have that you can have. And you do have like just this, I mean, you're hosting your own reunions now. You have this energy about you. And that's what excites me about these shows. I mean, is it something that you were nervous to do?
No, I wasn't nervous. No, because I mean, listen, as you can tell, there's not a shy bone in my body. So I wasn't nervous to do. If anything, I am thrilled to present to the world a side of these women that I just don't feel like they've seen on their shows. Because, listen, to tape a reality show, Ryan, amongst other women, is intimidating. It's competitive. It's fun, but it's also draining a lot of times, right? And you see that once the reunion happens. So I'm excited that I'm able to showcase my friendships that I have with these ladies to the world. And honestly, I want the audience, Ryan, to come out of this live show feeling like I know Teresa a little bit better. And it's nice to see her comfortable and have fun and not be stressed out. That's the goal for each show.
Will Louis be there as well?
I'm pretty sure he will be. I'm pretty sure. I love Louis. We were DMing yesterday, funny enough. So I'm pretty sure he will make an appearance.
I always wonder if they get stressed out at this time of year because Jersey's about to relaunch, you know, like all of the discourse will get started up all over again. And we see that little tiny scene in the trailer about Louis's money again. And I just wonder if for them, it's like going into battle each season. Not even after the shooting. Sure, going into the shooting's a battle, but then once it gets released, because the audience, the memes, the discourse on podcasts, it all starts up again. I always wonder how nervous they get or if they get excited.
No, they don't get excited all the time because they have to relive that moment. And the audience, so it's one thing to experience that for the 3-4 months of filming. You're living in it in real time. And then you're done filming, and then you're back to some sense of normalcy without the cameras, right? And the moment you're able to settle on what happened, you now have to relive that moment for another 4 months while it's airing. You have to deal with the tweets from the fans, also from the women defending their actions. And then, like you said, you got to do interviews. So it's an exhausting period for these ladies. And that's why my live show is going to be fun and not draining.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, you know, everybody talks and we have the reality reckoning now and all of these things coming forth. And I'm always for better mental health care and things of that nature. But would you recommend new women going on these shows still? Because I think they think it is this huge launching pad. In some ways, it very much is. You know, it's like SNL. Like I always compare it to like actors auditioning for SNL now. Like they're cast. They're not natural friend groups anymore. And then your entire history is up for, you know, prosecution by the fan base. Like in this day and age, do the pros still outweigh the cons, in your opinion?
For these women, absolutely. The pros outweigh the cons because it's sort of like being an actress in Hollywood. When you're over 40, the roles are limited. You know, you have to now become a producer or
Yes.
You have to wear other hats.
There's only one Meryl Streep, yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's why Reese Witherspoon got Hello Sunshine and started to, you know, produce movies with her production company. For a lot of these housewives, they're over 40. And some of them never had a job because they were a real housewife. So to come from obscurity to now being internationally famous.
Yeah.
And to now have a business and to make some money on your own without relying on your husband to give you an allowance every month, right? That empowers these women because they're showing the world that there is life after 40 for women. And they're doing it in a way that fulfills them. So those are all the pros of it. Listen, the con is obviously, you know, it's the social media trolls, it's the judgment, it's the threats. It's all a darkness to it. But once they sort of realize the blessings that's coming their way, then they're able to focus more on that.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And it also must be still so... such a powerful forum that even when people are like off the show for a while, it seems like there's this cottage industry of wanting to get back on the show. You know, wanted to get back there. I mean, we saw Tamra have that break. She got back on the show and she, you know, she was doing the podcast before that. And now everything's kind of lining up for Tamra. She did the Traitors, all of this stuff. But it is interesting to see when they get off the show, you have this whole group of ladies that I think we can all name that like are desperately year after year trying, getting out there, doing interviews, just trying to keep their name out there. And that's the thing. That's the real reality show or documentary I want to see is life after Housewife trying to get back on.
Well, yes. And it's sort of like Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List, right? Remember that show?
Oh, God, I love that show.
Yeah, it was sort of like watching this who I consider to be this iconic comedian.
Yeah,
that has some success on network television with Suddenly Susan, with Brooke Shields, and you saw her trying to like get off the D and get to the A. And life after Housewives is hard. A lot of these women are my friends. A lot of these women, when they aren't asked to come back another season, it's devastating. They don't have an identity. And this is not me making fun of it. It's me just telling you the real Ryan. They feel lost. They don't know how to grasp with I've had international fame. And now I don't have that. And the one person who I felt articulated this the best was Bronwyn from the OC Housewives.
OC, Bronwyn Wendell Burke, yeah.
She said, Ryan, on Kate Casey's podcast, she said, I don't know who I am without this job. Mind you, Ryan, she had it for only two seasons. So imagine these women, like a Tamra who had it for 10 plus seasons, right? She said, I feel like a failure. I don't have an identity. This entire show was my life. And she has nine kids. That's the sort of mental anguish these women go through without.
Well, can sometimes that then get into misplaced anger against the network and the show itself? Is that sometimes what we're seeing, or do you think all of this is very?
Every case is different, obviously. But yeah, I definitely listen. It's sort of like a bad breakup, right?
Yeah.
When a guy breaks up with you, oftentimes, you know, you get upset and you go to his house and you damage items or you cut his tires, you know.
As you do.
I was going to say, or is that me talking about my girl?
We can cut this. We can cut this part.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's just, you know, me. But it's not easy. I wish I'm able to to show the world like what that feels like. It's not Ryan. Look at me. It's not pretty. It's devastating for them, and some become very desperate.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're the Housewives whisperer. And also, you need a Housewives boot camp pre-casting and post-show. You need both of these support groups. Listen, I you know, just to let the audience know, if for some reason this is the first time you're hearing, in which there's no way this is, how did you get your start? Like, I mean, like, you're back in the day doing Atlanta and Jersey. Where do you come from? How did you get here?
Yeah, listen, born and raised in Detroit, Michigan.
Just like Jax Taylor. All right.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. We claim him. So I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and I moved to New York City in my early 20s because I wanted to, of course, get into the business of journalism because I studied that in college. So I interned at The View, rest in peace, Barbara Walters, and various other places. Once reality TV started its boom, and for my era, it was the boom of The Hills, you know, the spinoff on MTV. And I was sucked into it. I was like, this Heidi Spencer, Lauren Conrad, this is amazing television. And I would tell everybody around me, like, I love this show. Long story short, an opportunity came to me, talk about manifestation and your words have power. A woman who I was working with had the opportunity to work on this reality show in Atlanta. I'm living in New York City at the time, and so is she. And she came to me and said, would you like to be an associate producer on this reality show? Because all you do is talk about The Hills. And I said,
that's all it takes. Is it in the day? It was like, you just talked about The Hills. That's amazing. Yeah.
He said, you want to come to Atlanta? This is a true story, Ryan. I'm like, to do a reality show. What is it? She said, I don't know. They're calling it the Ladies of Hotlanta. And I said, I guess. So I went to Atlanta for 2 months and the show became The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And Ryan, I was hooked. And my trajectory increased from the associate producer to ultimately executive producer on that particular show. And the reality bug hit me, brother. And
what I was wondering. Like, so you felt even while they were shooting, like that first season of Atlanta, I revisited that recently, and it was, I mean, it just took me back because I watched those shows day and date when they initially came on, and to rewatch it, and you're just like, how far this genre has come. But when you're out there watching Nene and Kim Zolciak do their thing, you knew in that moment this was something. You were learning how the business worked yourself, but you knew this was fascinating in that moment.
Yes, I was, like I said, this young, inexperienced producer. The first week of filming, Sheree Witherspoon had a party at her house. And Nene and Kim, you know, they change at the gas station, and which is what you do apparently. And they're walking into Sheree's home. Nene's name isn't on the list. And Nene was cussing and fussing. And in that moment, I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a big show. I knew. That was the moment that I knew, because I never in my life seen somebody's name not on a list to a party and B, yell and get angry and leave in such an uproar that I said, I didn't see Lauren Conrad do that, not getting into like Ledoux. You know, like, that doesn't happen.
And that's when it was real. That's when people were just doing that just to do it. They didn't know that would be a good scene. Like, Nene's not in there. No, that was just Nene. That's who she is. And that's why it was so good.
That was, and that's what I'm missing as I watch reality TV, is that organic inhibitions of like just being yourself. I do feel like nowadays people are playing to the cameras. They're pandering to social media. Like you said, Nene, in that moment, if cameras were not there, NeNe would have done that, period. Right? Yes. And that's what's missing.
Well, I mean, and then you go over to Jersey, and like, I know I said this book already, but you guys, that Dave Quinn, Not All Diamonds and Rosé, it's an oral retelling of the history of these amazing years at Bravo, and you're in it, you know, you're in it multiple times, and you talk about like even the Jersey of it all, like, you know, even the table flip, like, is that then like Atlanta, like it's like a different version of Atlanta, but it's still the same magic because it's based around a character. It's based around Teresa. It's based around a real honest moment. But then it turns into this legendary thing. And it's like, I always say, if I had a time machine, I would go back to those moments. Like, I wouldn't do anything to help the world. I would go back to those moments to be in a restaurant and see the table flip, just a background actor, you know?
Yes. No, listen, it was ahead of its time. And once again, we had no idea it was going to be such an iconic moment that was going to occur. So here I am again, a junior producer, having the responsibility of making sure Danielle Staub had the book. Danielle wore a little black dress. She hands me the book upon arrival. We, the producers, decided like, when is the perfect moment to like hand Danielle the book? I'm the only male producer amongst this female producing team. And they said, are you able to like handle the book? I'm like, I can do it, but I like, I can't. And this is like season one back in 2009. There was no like breaking the fourth wall. It was unheard of. So I have this like book, this hard copy, hardcover book. And I get on my knees and I like crawl underneath the table so that nobody can see me. I tap Danielle's kneecap to motion to her, I have the book. So when you see Danielle put the book on the table, if you watch that scene again, you see Danielle look, and all of a sudden, a book appears in her hand and she drops it on the table. I'm the person that handed Danielle that book.
Listen, I mean, in the movie of your life, there's going to be some actor playing young Carlos King on his knees doing that scene again. That's going to be happening. And by the way, I have that hardcover of Cop Without a Badge, and every holiday I'll throw it down on the table just in case, just to get the conversation going in a different direction, because it's just, it's an iconic prop.
It
now.
Is.
So you have all of this success, but then you take it to the next level. Like, I mean, I know the podcast, the live tour, all of this stuff, but you executive produce all of these shows, Love and Marriage, multiple franchises, Bold and Bougie. Like, why stay in this unscripted storytelling format? Is it just because you dearly love it this much?
I do, Ryan. I love reality television. I love the docu-soap, is what we call it, the ensemble female-led entrepreneurs. I can't get enough of it. I love taking people who are regular, you know, for all intents and purposes, and putting them on camera and showcasing their real life and seeing them have success courtesy of being on the show. I love telling stories. I'm a true storyteller. My idols are Aaron Spelling, Norman Lear, Shonda Rhimes.
Oh, Norman Lear.
I'm a storyteller. And I believe in telling authentic stories. So it's something that I really enjoy doing, and I can't get enough of it. I really can't.
Where are we headed though? I mean, like, you were there in the beginning, and, you know, like I said, we've seen so many changes happen, and it seems like it just gets more insane and more insane. And the amazing thing about the early days is you didn't have the social media like it is now. And those are like, to me, the good old days when we weren't able to say everything that we think, good or bad. But now these shows kind of depend on second screen technology. Like, you want everybody to be tweeting your show, Instagramming the memes. You kind of want that. So as a producer, are you thinking all of this throughout the show of like, I'm hoping to get a big social media reaction. I'm hoping this. Does that play into everything for you now?
Yes, absolutely. There's so many shows that the audience has to choose from.
Yeah.
And you want your show to sing amongst the crowd. You want it to stand out amongst the crowd. So you desire to have your shows have a social media following to trend on Twitter. So people can say, what's that show? Love and Marriage. What is that? Do I need to watch this?
Which one do I have to watch? Which franchise? Yeah. Where do I start? Yeah.
You want it to be a part of those conversations, Ryan, because it's hard to, there's so many options.
Yeah.
And people aren't watching TV in real time anymore. And they're not watching a full season like they used to. You know, like you said, with Potomac, it's like your sports. So you're going to watch it until the end, although some episodes may feel softer to you than normal. But you're still going to give it its proper due of watching for the full season. So a brand new show is something we have to really work hard to get people to watch and to watch it live or watch it 3 days of airing your DVR. So those ratings numbers can count. But it's a very competitive business. And, you know, the TV industry is definitely going through a interesting transition, Ryan, because it's less hours on television that we're able to produce for, but we also have to make sure to feed the audience what they want. So it's a trying time.
Yeah. I mean, and there's an artistry behind it as well. So like, I mean, we want you out there seeing like the next big thing. Like, do you still go out in your daily life? Do you always have an eye out for interesting relationships, interesting people, that kind of star quality?
Oh yes. No, cause I love real people. I love constantly thinking about like, what is next? What am I missing? Who am I missing? You know, I did a funny call to action recently when Monica Garcia from The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City appeared. And I said, find me the black version of Monica Garcia, because I need to find that type of woman to build a show around, because I was so fascinated by her and what she brought to that show and how iconic and amazing she was. And she really reinvigorated something in me that was missing, because, you know, I want to get inspired. And Monica Garcia inspired me to go out there and look for like all types of versions of her.
I mean, I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, you had mentioned that in one of this week's episodes. You brought up Monica's name just in an offhanded remark. But I just loved her so much. I loved her so much even before the reality Von T's of it all. Mm-hmm. I was like, you have the mom relationship.
Yes.
You have stuff that we haven't delved into about her previous relationship. I was like, that's a great second season right there. The reality Von T's of it all, and this is how desensitized I feel. I still to this day, I'm like, I don't really see the big, I know. I mean, like, I can tell you five housewives right now, big name housewives that have Finsta. I mean, you know that as yes. well. Like, that's why I'm like, the fact that, and to me, and I know this is not popular because she is popular, but I also will never believe that Heather Gay did not know she was going to tell production that day. She sold the scene. She produced her own scene, because in fact, when you watch interviews, the producers are like, yeah, she told us. And we were like, so do you think the audience will care? She had to sell the idea, but I know she had that idea before she went in. And I thought it was brilliantly executed. What a great finale. But I still think, I want to see underdogs. I want to see Monica be able to talk her way out of it or not talk her way out of it. And I still don't think, by the way, speaking of that, Carlos, you're such a huge fan. Do you agree that I don't think that was the best reunion performance Monica Garcia could have given?
Oh, no. And I said this to her.
What did she say back?
She said, Carlos, they cut out so much. You missed it. I said, your burn book was an epic fail. I
like Carrot Top.
Yeah, no, truly, truly. So I said it to her. And she's like, no, they didn't show everything. They didn't show everything. So no, I agree with you. I think Heather had an agenda. I think Heather doesn't want her information to be exposed. And she knew that Monica was going to expose it. And she said, I need to get her off the show before she reveals the secrets that I'm keeping under wraps. And she got the other ladies involved and saying this traitor is amongst us, right? And we have to get her off this show because she's going to reveal so much to the audience about the stuff that we know we're doing, but that we made a pact never to bring it up.
Yeah, I was like, did these people kill, like, did they kill a hobo somewhere? Like, I felt like they were all of a sudden, I was like, what is going on? But also, like, I want that kind of mess. And I also want to see them talk through those things because, you know, in Housewives, you know, we saw with Meredith Marks and Lisa Barlow, like, they were, like, insanely furious with each other two seasons ago. And all of a sudden, they're doing scenes together like nothing's happening. Like, relationships are meant to be mended in terms of Real Housewives. And I will always be sad that we did not start off this season with that, because they're doing new cast scenes and I got a lot of information about them. I mean, but do you think there's a world in which Monica does come back? Because I definitely think so.
Yes, yes. There's always room for a mid-season surprise, right? There's always room for that. And I think, listen, I haven't heard anything about what's happening currently as they're filming Salt Lake City, which to me isn't great.
Yeah.
Just like we didn't hear much that was going on with Beverly Hills, because as we saw this season, nothing was going on. So it's not a good sign. So I could definitely see the way Beverly Hills brought back Denise Richards and Camille. And it was like, what is this reunion that is happening with the Where Are They Now? Because I think they felt like we need something to happen. So I saw that to say, I don't think we saw the last of Monica. I think they had to maybe let the girls prove they don't need her. And I'm not too sure they're pulling that off.
But yeah, well, sometimes I think with also then to prove, I sometimes think then people are forced to overdo it because they're trying to then prove to production they can do it. And I just don't want to see a lot of fake fights, because I think the audience will see through that pretty much immediately. But speaking of Aaron Spelling, if Aaron Spelling was doing this, you would see Monica show up on the very last episode of the season finale of the next season of Salt Lake. And it would just be like a shot of shoes walking up, and then she'll be like, I'm here to tease the reality. What's that? And they would just end and shoot to black and to be continued. I mean, like Carlos is like, I'll deal with that. Listen, I have about 10 more minutes with you, or little bit less, but
I'm going to charge.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was saying another thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of Beverly Hills and next season is in, you know, casting. We left this season great ratings, solid ratings after Lisa Rinna, but we have Kyle going through this, obviously, separation, potential divorce. The Morgan Wade of it all consistently gets brought up to the point where I don't care anymore. I like seeing Morgan Wade on television. I kind of just think that's interesting. I want her to come back in some way. But if we don't ever, I just truly don't at this point care. Is there a world, and I've heard you say this, and I'm curious your reasons why, is you think Teddy Mellencamp should come back to Beverly Hills? You think that at some point she should? And in my thought was like, do you think as a producer, would you ever offer Kyle a deal to sweeten her pot, to make her comfortable, to say, we'll bring Teddy back. We know that's one of your BFFs. We want you to feel great about this next season. Is that how production works in any way, Carlos?
Well, you never want to give that much power to one person, because they more than likely could abuse it. And you don't ever want to show a certain level of favoritism to one cast member, because it will unfortunately make it seem like, oh, well, she gave you that, so she gets this, so I'm going to try to do the same thing. Why can't I get what she got? I did it. So you don't want to fall into those territories. So what you have to do is just have real conversations and say to someone like a Kyle, look, what is going to make you comfortable sharing the story? Because it's important and the audience wants to know. And if she says, like, I don't have a friend on the show, I'm not comfortable revealing things. And then
Anna Marie got let go. We need somebody.
Exactly, right? So, like, what are we doing? And I think that's when you say to yourself as producer, let's at least try to bring somebody back that she's comfortable with, and let's see what happens. The thing with Teddy that I don't get, Teddy is not the first nor the last housewife to have social media hate them. I will go as far as to say the hatred that Teddy Mellencamp received is the same treatment that Dorit is receiving currently, and Dorit has not lost her job. And I feel bad for Kyle, because Kyle is so real, and I could tell she wants to give a lot more, but I don't think there's one woman amongst that current cast that she trusts implicitly. Yeah. And when you have somebody that's been on that show since day one, you at least have to bring on somebody that they trust.
Yeah, it feels like coworkers at this point. Like coworkers that do a good job, but they do a good job. Like it's good coworkers. But like you said, Kyle's very open. But I want her to be even sometimes more open. Like after buying Beverly Hills, I want to see that Kyle more. I want her to feel comfortable in that way. But also the Teddy of it all, I think with the Teddy, it gets to a point also that it's just what she represents. It's now, it takes on a life of its own with the joking. You know, but also at the same time, watching Beverly Hills, I never thought she was a force. I didn't really see that as a viewer at all. So I'd be curious to see, because I think it's going to happen. Like, people need to accept that this will happen. She will get back on Beverly Hills.
You think she will?
This season or 100%. 100%. I think she completely will. I think this is just in the bag completely. You still are on the fence?
No, listen, I have been championing for Teddy to come back for the past 2 years. And what's funny is because I sometimes guest co-host on their podcast, Two T's, and she mentioned she filmed last season. They never aired it. And apparently she got into a little argument with somebody and she said they wanted her to come back. And she said, I'm not working for free. But we never saw the scene. So
also, isn't it hard when you have that for like the podcast, like it works for Tamra, but also with like Teddy Conkright, you know, Cronkite or whatever they call her on the, like, isn't Teddy it Walter. Then hard? I mean, yeah, Teddy Walter, isn't it then hard to then like try, it's another, not reality Von Teese in a sense, but you want these ladies to feel like they're not going to get shit talked by one of their own on a podcast potentially. You know, that's sometimes I wonder if that goes through a producer's head at all.
Well, that's when you have to put things in place. You have to put things in place in their agreements that dictate what can and cannot be said, because at the end of the day, every reality star who signs on to do a show, there's a non-disclosure language in the agreement. So you would have to insert the actual podcast, which not to get in the weeds of it. I'm assuming that's what they're doing to Tamra, which is why she's not allowed to recap OC. Every time OC is on the air, she gets somebody else to do her job for her. So yeah, but again, that's an easy situation to fix. I want Beverly Hills to be the greatest that it can be. And I just think Teddy, who is so close to the force multiplier on the show, and I feel like Teddy has learned her lesson.
You think Teddy's close to being a force multiplier?
No. Teddy's close to the force multiplier.
Kyle. I was like, wow. Okay. I was like, what? Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
I will say this. Teddy learned her lesson from not being a great housewife her first two seasons. And the Teddy who I know today, Teddy, Teddy will run circles around that entire cast. Mark my word.
Yes, but then also I think goes on with what we were just talking about Salt Lake. You don't want to have somebody come back and they feel like they need to throw everything against the wall immediately. Like, I got to do everything immediately. Like, you know, that's like Noella did that a little bit on OC her first season, where she threw everything against the wall, like crying into a river, all of that stuff. But listen, man, you are a legend. And I just got to say to you, like, sometimes I will feel down and I will read something that you wrote or see you talk about, you know, blessings and manifestation. And you seem like, for such a powerful person, you really seem like you have such a good sense of self and a good sense of humbleness. And I think, you know, you really are very inspiring and always have been to me. So it is truly, I'm not joking when I say this is a blessing, because I got offered this and I was like, are you kidding? I've wanted to talk to this man for years. I hope I know you are so busy, so I hope this was enjoyable somewhat for you.
Because, you can't tell.
Yeah. No, I know, but listen, you do that. You make it easy on anybody you talk to. That's part of your charm. And that's why you guys need to get tickets to one of these live shows. I'm telling you, I was just listening to his podcast this morning and he just cracked me up. He was talking about Monica's boyfriend, Inc. And what was the line I wrote down that I just was like, I don't usually laugh out loud. He says, Mia took the hall pass and went to the second floor of the gymnasium. Ah! He was talking about the hall pass that Gordon gave her. And I was like, the specificity in that joke was so tight that I was like, I got to write this down. Like this is amazing. Anyways, his tour is going to sell out, so get your tickets now. New Jersey, Teresa, Legend, Atlanta, Tamar Braxton, Irvine, California with Teddy and Tamara, and then DC with the entire cast of Love and Marriage DC. So on top of that, Reality with the King podcast, go subscribe. And also, I know he doesn't need it, but go rate 5 stars immediately. That's what we do to people that take the time to come on this show. That's a blessing in itself. So we want to give something back. I just can't say enough good things. Where do we start, man? For honest, like Love and Marriage. If we are not familiar with the Love and Marriage franchise, where do you suggest we start? Where do we enter? Because some people will say from the very beginning, yeah. And some people will be like, no, start over here and start with this season. What do you recommend for people?
Good question. Okay, so for Love and Marriage Huntsville, which is the number one show on the Oprah Winfrey Network, that show, you start with season one.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of mess going on, and you got to watch season one to understand it. For Love and Marriage DC, start with season two.
Okay, season two.
Hey, Balloons. And for Love and Marriage Detroit, start with season one. Season two is coming soon, so... and you can find it on the Oprah Winfrey Network or the Oprah Winfrey Network app, or go to Max. Max has...
they have all the shows. And Bold and Bougie, you guys, is on WeTV. So yeah. That's on WeTV, but everywhere. And also, I forgot to say, on his podcast, he just had Apollo. He had Apollo Nita. He had Apollo. He always has Dr. Heavenly on his like YouTube. Like he just knows everybody. So it's so exciting where you're going to head from here. And I really do hope I get to talk to you again, Carlos, because this was a real treat to start my weekend. So you guys, I'm going to put all that information. I'm going to potentially even go to the Irvine show. So
I'm going to see you in person.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I'll be wearing my Reality Von Teese outfits and just in a corner somewhere. By the way, could you build a show around Monica? Could you pitch a show?
I would love to. That woman belongs on somebody's television screen.
Right? There's so much yet to uncover. You know, I really do. And I think you got to fall in love with new ladies. There's new ladies out there for us to fall in love with. New queens, as you call them. There are quintessential housewives that we have not discovered yet. And I think that is the exciting thing when somebody you actually do respond to in the first season, which Monica was. So Carlos King, thank you for all this time. Have the best weekend. What are you doing this weekend?
Sleeping.
Let's cut that out. That's wild. Let's cut it out.
I gotta get ready for the tour and take more episodes. So on the weekends, right, I like to decompress. So
awesome.
Sleeping.
Well, I will talk to you hopefully very soon, and we'll talk to you guys later. Wasn't he great? Carlos King, ladies and gentlemen. That was a real treat for me, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Okay, so now we're gonna have Bill Bailey, my dad. Listen, my grandma, 100 years old. Can you imagine living 100 years? What a life. Died peacefully. Shout out to hospice again. Just magical people that I've met this year that have the work they do with people with illness is just, it's incredible. The strength that people that work in hospice have, it just blows me away. Anyways, I wanted to read my grandma's obituary to you real quick before I get into my dad, just to show you how big of a life and how many people were in it. My grandma Horton, Frances Bessie Bailey Horton, age 100, passed away Thursday, April 4th, 2024 at the Ashford on Broad. Fran was born in Columbus, Ohio on March 4th, 1924, to the late Persis Booty and Prince Bessie. Can you believe that my great-grandparents, Persis and Prince, those names, wow. Anyways, she was a member of Westfall Avenue Baptist Church and the Order of the Eastern Star. Fran retired from Western Electric with over 28 years of service. She loved to travel and spend time with her family. In addition to her parents, Fran was preceded in death by her husband, Henry Horton, son, Dale Bailey, daughter-in-law, Becky Bailey, that's my mom, son-in-law, Jay Ketzmeyer, and 10 siblings. She is survived by her children, Howard and Marcella Bailey, Joanne Ketzmeyer, and Bill Bailey. 6 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren. I think this is a misprint. Uh-oh. Wait, 3 great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Numerous nieces and nephews. A graveside service anyways, this is more personal information, but that just, I mean, think about all the children and the grandchildren and, I don't know, life. She lived 100 years. But anyways, I wanted to, it's been a while since my dad's been on, and I don't, you know, I was talking to Miss Maloney, Katie's mom, last week, which I loved that interview so much. And she was talking about how I would always have my parents on. And I think in this, you know, it's been 7 months since mom passed and, you know, dad's come on a couple of times, but I don't know. We're not in this kind of, when they would always come on, it would be kind of really fun and funny. And I just don't think we're in that place yet. Hopefully, you know, so I haven't had him on a lot because it's hard, you know, but he wanted to come on and just say hi to you guys. And it's always a good opportunity for me to talk to him about stuff and how he's feeling. So without further ado, the one, the only, Bill Bailey. Okay, guys, sorry for the sound being a little echoey. We don't have a professional mic. But here with me, first time in a little bit, unfortunately, the reason why we're together isn't that great, but he's great. So please welcome my dad, Bill Bailey, back to the pod.
Hey guys, how? Missed you.
Did you say how?
I meant to say hi.
How? Oh my gosh, wow. So if you don't, we're in Columbus, Ohio, and my grandma, my dad's mom, passed away a couple of days ago. She was 100 years old.
Yep.
And so my dad, me and my sister are here. And so how are you? Wait, by the way, for the most important question, what do you think about Tom Sandoval this season?
So anyway.
Then let's get to the important stuff
so
first.
I says to the guy.
So, no, I mean, a lot of people want to know how you're doing.
I'm doing okay, you know.
It's been a lot of loss in 1 year.
Well, pretty much last year or so have been not been nice, but it's part of life. No, I'm doing okay.
Now, everybody keeps saying that's part of life, though, which I feel, I mean, that's, I feel overwhelmed by how much loss there is and that we have to think about it all of a sudden, which seems unfair and so much at all at once, you know? Or, I mean, you know, mom was 7 months ago.
Yeah, I know. It's just really, that's, you know, we lost mom 7 months ago, now my mom. But, you know, my mom just turned 80 exactly.
100, 100.
Yeah, sorry.
You just shaved 20 years off her
life. I'm the one that's turning 100. Yeah. I mean, 80, whatever. So I says. Yeah. But, no, anyway, no, it's just, you know, losing Becky and then my mother. My mother, a little bit different. She, like I said, she lived to 100. She had a good life, well taken care of and all that. She went through a lot in her life, being a young widow with 4 kids to raise.
Yeah, because your dad died when you were 10, right?
Yeah, when I was 10 years old, he passed away, but that was okay.
And he was a very bad man.
He's
your
a very
dad.
Bad man. Yeah. Very bad man. One of the best days of my life in all of our lives was when he died. Seriously, I know that's terrible. I apologize to God and everything, but it's just he was a very bad man.
Yeah, abusive and all of that stuff. So
he loved beating up women and children.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he could be on Vanderpump Rules potentially.
Kind of just like I used to do you and Carol when you were little.
Yeah, yeah. No, you never actually touched me. No. Not even a hug. Well, not even any kind of
clarify that. Clarify that.
Sorry, we're grieving, so we're horrible jokes. So I mean, I think though, you know, the point is, Grandma did live such an amazing life, and she went really peacefully. I think the bad thing is having to be reminded of how much loss we've had in 1 year.
Yeah.
Because it brings up mom, and we're in Columbus where mom grew up, you grew up, you know, you showed me your high school yesterday and where you guys got married. And
our first date, the theater, our first date.
Yeah, the first bed.
Yeah.
No, but it's got to be hard.
I can say something, but I won't.
Yeah.
That's called maturity.
Yeah, you're growing in your old age.
I know, thank you.
Well, no, I mean, I just think this year's already rocked you, and then it's, but I mean, like I said, it's really good, and Kara is out, my sister, your daughter's out here, and she's on a walk right now, but she's been amazing.
Amazing. Both of you guys have been amazing. I'm so blessed. You're a legacy to mom.
Yeah.
And I mean, truly are. I mean, I'm a very blessed man to have the family that I have, the friends that I have, even you listeners. You guys are amazing. I want to, if I can, Ryan, I'd like to.
No, we're cutting this part out. Yeah.
No, I just, and I hope Kim in New Mexico is listening. Kim, I just want to say thank you so very much for your cards. They do mean a lot. Your words are very thoughtful and loving. And I do, I do appreciate it very much. So I'm sorry I haven't written back to you, but I'm kind of, like Becky told me one time when she was about ready to go, she told me I'm a procrastinator. So I told mom, I said, well, I only procrastinate things I don't want to do. She didn't laugh.
Yeah, she wasn't in a great mood towards the end.
No, she wasn't.
No. Yeah. But I mean, thinking about, you know, your mom and like, you know, how many memories are flooding through your mind. And then last night we were at dinner with your sister, my aunt, and her daughter, and we had so many laughs.
Oh, geez.
Which is great.
Well, you have to laugh, and it's okay to laugh. You know, it's one of the things, it's really okay to laugh. It's okay to smile. They would want us to do that. You know, life goes on, so you might as well live it and try to enjoy it as much as you can.
Well, you got to remind yourself of that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's enough for you to say it, but you got to remind yourself of that sometimes.
But again, I'm so very blessed with having you and Kara. Just very blessed. It's just amazing and everything. And I do appreciate it. I love you guys very much. And I want to thank you listeners. In fact, I got to brag about Ryan. We're in Columbus, and yesterday we cleaned out my mother's apartment. And I thought it'd take us 2 or 3 days, but got it done in one day, which was really great. And then we went out yesterday, went to German Village, this place in Columbus, a really nice place. Really, I always loved going there. And we went to this place, real famous sausage place, Schmitz. And they have a candy store right next to it because you have to wait a long time to get into Schmitz, so you go buy candy. And so I'm sitting there, Ryan comes out of the candy shop, and some woman sitting there says, "Are you Ryan Bailey?" She was one of you listeners.
She arrested me on the spot. Yeah. No, it was wild. And then we started talking about Vanderpump Rules. And then Kara got to see that, which was, I got to show off for my sister. But that was really cool.
It really was.
Blew me away. But yeah, she was like, what was Ryan Bailey be doing in Columbus? And I was like, oh, well, my grandma died. And I think I ruined her party that she was having with her friend. No, it was great. But it is interesting of just, I keep thinking about so much loss and I think about death now so much where I never really thought about it before. But, you know, Kara said last night, Kara, you know, very religious and you know, but she was saying that in death, I mean, she has a very specific way of viewing heaven and death and stuff.
Very much so, yeah.
And she told me last night, she said, Mom's not thinking about me up in heaven. She said, you know, they don't think about us because they're so happy and all that stuff. They're not concerned with us. And I thought that sounded like bullshit. Mom's not thinking about me.
But she, well, yeah. Now I guess we can tell you now.
Yeah.
You were adopted.
Yeah.
Anyway, but no, Kara and Kara's amazing and she is very devout. But how does she know?
That's what I say. She seems to know everything about heaven. And I was like, this, but I just feel like if mom's up there, she would be thinking about us in some way.
Me.
Yeah. Even if just to laugh at us.
She'd be shaking her head that I knew he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Beck. I wish I would have listened more. You know that. I knew it. I couldn't do it. But we're doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it. I was so funny. I said we're sometimes the blind leading the blind. And Kara's picking up the slack sometimes for mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I'm the brute force where I can lift a big chair or something.
And I'm eye candy.
Yeah, you're. Well, by the way, at grandma's retirement home, her next door neighbor, this lady, who, Bonnie, by the way, lied about her age, said that she was 72 years old. Dad's 75 years old. This lady, I mean, really nice lady, but definitely not 72 years old, but hit on dad, gave dad her number.
Yep. And I'm going to use it.
But, and then there's, I mean, a couple of funny things, I mean, sad and funny about the nursing home or the nursing facility was that, I mean, we're cleaning out our stuff and it was like scavengers. Yeah, all of the other elderly people.
With their wheelchairs.
Yeah, they're like, what's that lamp going? Can we, we're like taking stuff into other people's places. And then there was a lady, I was dumping things in the dumpster. There was a lady outside who had obviously had a stroke or something. I don't know how she got outside.
Was that Brenda?
I think so. She got
the one who's like,
yeah, yeah, and she got outside. Brenda, yeah. And she couldn't get in. So I opened the door for her and then she, and then I was like, oh, I'll wheel you to your place. And it turned out her place was like second floor all the way to the, so I was wheeling her for a while and I took her into her space and you know, just like, Roger, I mean, very sweet lady, but
oh, they're all nice.
I was just like, this is, well, I mean, this was really, it was just very interesting and sobering to see everybody.
It really is. And one of the things, you know, visiting Ashford where mom was, grandma was visiting Ashford and everything. I got to know a lot of the residents there and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we'd be down in the dining room eating lunch or dinner, whatever, and I would end up taking almost everybody from our table back to their room. They were all in wheelchairs, and they were so nice and sweet and just really nice. And that's going to be us one day. Well, I'm kind of getting there sooner than I wanted to, but it happens.
Does that scare you?
No, not at all.
Really?
Not one bit. I'm happy with my life. I think it's interesting. I'm looking forward to what happens. You know, and no, it doesn't really scare me at all. It's just, it happens.
Yeah.
But you can't give up. You still got to live.
But that's something you need to tell yourself.
But I am living.
Yeah. But I mean, well, that's a lot of people want to know, how has it been to live by yourself?
Really tough. I mean, it, you know, I think about myself. I think about like all the love I'm surrounded by, you know, my family, my friends, my church, and I'm surrounded by love, but at the end of the day, I still go home to an empty and quiet house.
Yeah.
And I'm about ready to tear up now. But at first, it was just awful. I would leave, if I was going to come back at night, I left every light in the house on, because I didn't want to come back to a dark house. And
Mom would be livid that you left every, I bet you're turning the AC on too.
You think I work for the electric company? You know, see, I remember that line. You think I work for the electric company? No, Mom, no. No, no. But no, it really is tough. It's quiet, you know, and I'm out with all my family, my friends or whatever. And I come home, it's just, I miss her.
Yeah, I
miss her.
Well, it was wild that about a month and a half ago, I was up late. I think I was up till like 2 a.m. doing the podcast, which would have been 3 Arizona time. And then I wasn't having a good day. And I texted you and I said, hey, I'm having a real rough time with Mom. And I figured you'd get it in the morning. And you were like, no, I'm up. And I was like, what are you doing up? And you're like, I get it.
I don't sleep much.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. It's really, sleep has been weird. Yeah.
It's been very weird. It's really tough sleeping in our bed.
But you're not sleeping in it yet, are you?
Off and on.
Really?
But it's just tough. That's where Mom was.
Yeah.
And, it's tough. And,
come on.
I'm starting to tear up here. I'll get over it.
You know. No, it's good to cry. It's good to get it out. I would love to get back to a point. Well, I mean, because when I talk about this, everybody talks about their own experiences, which is amazing.
Exactly.
But they always say it'll never leave you. Years and years, which is amazing. You don't want it to ever leave you. But I would love to get back to some fun again. You know, I mean, like last night was fun and all that. But sometimes I think everything is so serious right now, or it feels so, or you know, you're just like kind of going through the motions on a lot of things.
Well, you know, Mom and I were together almost 55 years, and you know, you don't forget something like that easily. And she was just so wonderful.
Yeah,
I mean, really wonderful. I was so.
Are there things that you appreciate now that you didn't appreciate when she was alive?
Sure, about everything. Yeah. I'm not kidding. This woman, seriously, was amazing. Now that I'm picking up the slack, so to say, and trying to catch up and everything, and it's just amazing how organized she was. You know, we used to do our trips to Europe and Asia. She had a travel book. She did I just had to sit there and look pretty, you know?
Well, that's what I said the other day when my flight got all screwed up. When I said, Mom would have been on that. Mom would have found a way to get me there. I couldn't, you know, like she would have found a way. She would have been on the phone making somebody else's life miserable on the other line. And she would have found a way.
She would have done it.
You know, and that was one of the many amazing things. But in terms of your mom, then, you know, you're out here, you know, she has a burial, 100 years old. She has her pastor that'll be out here. Now, we went to the funeral place where mom had set up everything for grandma's funeral in the future. 10 years ago. Yeah, 10 years ago. Yeah, but it was interesting. They took us through some of the new options.
Oh, my God.
And I had no idea what a big visit. You can shoot your loved one into space. There was three different space flights where you can send your loved one on an Earth orbit, and it was like $5,000. You can make one into a diamond ring with their hair or DNA. So they have all these additional things to be shot into space, which I thought was really funny.
In a sense. Very much. Well, the whole, when we went there, I went there, Ryan was there, Kara was there, my sister Joanne was there at the funeral home, and we laughed and laughed and laughed. I mean, we really did.
Because the mom's funeral home, it was not funny. Like, was a very different experience of just, like, I think we were all shell-shocked. And, you know, the gentleman doing it was fine. But it was, I just remember it being very not the opposite of laughter completely.
Oh, well, no, there's nothing to laugh about.
But grandma, I mean, 100 years old. Did everything.
She's gone as a part of my life. And as you know, for the last, 10 years? After my brother died, I became responsible for
it. Yeah.
And so I've been caring for her for, 10 years now, coming back to Columbus and
talking to her every day
her every day. And before she got really bad and couldn't really travel anymore or walk or anything, I would come there. We'd go out to restaurants at her favorite place. I would take her on drives.
I mean, a year and a half ago, she was eating a huge rack of ribs.
Oh, my goodness. She loved those
98 years ribs. Old, eating a huge rack of ribs.
No, and she loved her wine.
Yeah, loved her. And the other question, sometimes people were like, well, why didn't your grandma move to Arizona and be with... But she didn't want to. No. She refused.
We thought about that. I even checked out places near our house that we could put her, but... She she hated me when I put her in the assisted living facility.
Yeah.
I mean, she hated me.
But she couldn't live in her tiny house by herself because she was falling all the time.
And I took her car away. So I'm the bad guy. But it's been a part of my life, And then for the last year, when Becky was on her journey, I couldn't be here. But I called her and... I fortunately had some good friends here. My brother-in-law would really be good and go visit her and take her wine, things like that. And this sounds very selfish, and I don't mean it and feel sorry for myself. I really don't mean it. But it's a real burden off of me now. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't mean that bad. A son should take care of the mother when she can't take care of herself.
Yeah.
Because she took care of us when we took care.
Yeah.
Take care of ourselves. It was no problem. I liked doing it. It made me feel useful. I think it made mom feel loved because she had no family around anymore.
So
she was the last one in Columbus.
And she wasn't super aware in the last, it wasn't like she was.
But it was 1 month exactly since we had her 100th birthday party, and it was fantastic. What a way to go out. We had over 40-some people there. Kids, great-great-grandkids, grandkids, great-kids, whatever. There were cousins there I've never even met before. One of my cousins from Maryland was there, Kristen. And we're communicating now and everything. But
what is weird, though, I mean, we're at the Airbnb, and, somebody's life, we have four boxes of pictures and all that, of thinking about somebody's life.
That's a life right there.
Because I was thinking about all the shit I have of, like, somebody's going to have to go through Batman action figures and Vanderpump Rules merchandise. Yeah. And I was like, how sad is that? I mean, we were going through grandma's stuff going, what the? All the nudes grandma took. Who knew?
I really didn't know she was a porn star.
But I was just thinking all that stuff that we... that I've held dear or something, it just doesn't mean anything. It
doesn't mean a darn thing.
What, matters is people. And I think the other thing that I always have a hard time with, and I have most of my life, is that, this is my way of communicating to people. I can do this easily and it makes me feel good, but it's really hard for me in real life to reach out to people.
Sure,
I don't like to burden people with my feelings or problems. And, and I think sometimes you're similar in that way as well, is that you'll... I try to be self-sufficient enough to just we're not even self-sufficient. I'll barely shower, but like, but you know, like I won't. I'll talk about it here, but in my real life, I don't. I'm not.
You don't shower?
No, I know. I'm not an open. I don't go. Like, I don't call Nick or Rebecca here and there, obviously. But you know, Meditza and Sandra, I don't really. I mean, but it's like I really keep that stuff bottled up, which I have to be careful of and watch. You know,
well, you do have to, because it's one thing dealing with grief. You know, at first, of course, it was just overwhelming. I mean, I was a semi-functioning zombie more so than I normally am. And it just, the grief, it just piled on you. It never stopped. It's relentless. But now, it's still there. But I can handle, because I've been meeting with therapists and everything, grief counseling, which is a help. And
you're antidepressants, which I'm on as well.
Antidepressants, yeah. But you get to grief now, it doesn't go away, but I just shove it down.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Should we be shoving it down? Yeah, that's we're not, because you don't want to explode.
Not at all. But that's what you do. You just keep shoving it down, and that you get used to it. But no, but the griefing and just like I thought I ran out of tears, but I haven't. As you just heard, I mean, after Mom left, I cried my eyes out almost every day. I couldn't even think. But no, it's life is good.
It's good, but at the same time, like I feel like it is interesting because that we talk about that first, you know, the month leading up to the death and the month after.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There are aspects of it I remember, but like I said, it'll still blow me away if somebody like, oh yeah, I talked to you during that time. I'm like, I don't remember it. Like there's like huge gaps in certain parts of my memory. Like we were talking about the other day of Mom's service and then at Kara's, the little reception with all her friends.
Yeah.
I remember that, but I don't remember after. Like I don't remember where we went. I don't remember the next day.
I just went back to the house.
Yeah, I just don't. Like I can't really remember it, and then I remember being hot in Arizona. But I remember also ordering pants on Amazon that didn't fit me because I didn't have pants there for my mom's funeral, and how weird it was that I didn't button my pants up for Mom's funeral, and that nobody would see it. But I will say, like, but then coming out of that, there's like moments. But then the last couple of weeks, I've been really, it's been really hard. It just feels very. Everything feels very flat. And my life's so exciting, but that's why I love doing this or interviewing people or something or even doing recaps because it gets me in like really silly moods and stuff that's what I want.
Well, that's what you want, yeah.
But then in my outside, it's very hard. Like I just feel dead. Like Christmas was really hard and I feel like it just kind of goes in these waves.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's just, you know... Like I've said, and I don't mean this snobbish-wise, because I always felt when people would say this, it was very snobbish, but you don't know what it's really like until you go through it.
Yeah.
And that's just a fact.
And everybody goes through it, too, because everybody, when we talk about it, I get so many messages of people that have gone through it, absolutely. Or people like, I mean, like that they have their own stories, and that's, it is that one thing that kind of bonds us all, is that we'll all go through this.
But life is good. It goes on. And I'm really looking forward to going to New York in about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Taking Dad to the Big Apple. Yeah, going to go see some shows and party it up.
And maybe get a hooker or two. And,
Right. Yeah. Or you can just stay in Arizona, whatever you need to do. Yeah. as we start wrapping up.
I like to travel and stuff like that. I'm really, real fast, Frank.
Yeah,
I really miss traveling like Becky and I did. I mean, we were planning. Well, we missed out on South Africa because of the pandemic. But then we had plans to drive across Spain, starting in Portugal to Barcelona. There was other places we wanted to go back to London. We wanted to go back to Israel, and these were all in the planning stages. But
yeah,
I'm not going to travel by myself. So if anybody wants to go,
yeah. Well, by the way,
do not
give your number out. No, do not. And I guess just to wrap it up, what are your political views? No, I'm joking.
They suck. That's my political views. Jeez.
By the way, if you're in Columbus, Ohio, the big deal is the eclipse.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
They've got eclipse fever out here. They're selling eclipse glasses and shirts at every grocery store. It's like a big deal.
Schools are closing. Businesses are closing at noon. It's just unreal.
I mean, who knew just for 3.5 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean,
big deal.
Yeah, you haven't had that kind of had sex the last time, 3.5 minutes. Yeah.
If only.
Yeah.
But I don't mean, but what else are you going to do in Columbus, I guess, on a Tuesday afternoon?
It's Monday.
Oh, Monday.
Monday. Yeah, yeah. Just watch the sky go dark.
No, and I don't mean I love Columbus.
Yeah.
And I'm going to miss coming here on a regular basis. I really am. But we'll see.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is crazy. This is your whole life, you know?
This is my life. This is where it started, you know? Like, makes me really appreciate everything. I drive by where I grew up, which, you know how bad it was. It's like a shack. And I'm like, God, there were sixes of them.
Well, yeah, you guys got to see this shack they grew up. I mean, you know, it is tiny. And that's what's so crazy is that each one of you kids, you know, went on to do really great things.
Absolutely.
And have a life that you wouldn't have imagined because you guys were dirt poor. And
people used to leave food at our door.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's like shocking. And then you were talking about last night, you know, is that you and mom got away because you had a job and your job transferred you. Yeah. And mom actually was like, yeah, let's go. Because her sister, who's passed away a couple of years ago, Aunt Kathy, she wouldn't have gone.
She would not
she
have gone.
She was scared of, you know, like leaving.
Because, you know, we moved around five or six times.
Yeah, but mom was game for it, you know?
Yep, no, she loved it. We both loved it because it was new places. We made new friends. We got to travel to new places. And, but, you know, we're in Arizona now. And that's what
I just, that's like the thing is just the life. When you're a kid and just anybody listening, you never know where life can take you and be open to every possibility.
Well, I know I've said this before as I'm old and I repeat myself a lot. But I mean, back then I couldn't even dream about the life I live now. I didn't know how.
You wouldn't have a language.
I didn't know how.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm so thankful. Thank you, God, for my family. I mean, to be married to Becky for 53 years was my biggest accomplishment, you know, and she probably saved my life, and who knows where I would have ended up. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully God is listening. Hopefully God's a listener to the podcast. Hey, God, if you're listening, 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That would be truly a gift.
God, he was adopted.
Dad, you know, Lindsay Hubbard from Summer House, remember Summer House?
Yeah, Apple, sure do,
she's single now.
Ooh.
And you're single now. And actually, you don't Vanderpump Rules. There's a character, Katie Maloney, that was with one of the guys, Schwartz.
Yeah.
I talked to her mom on the show last week, and she's single. And I said, hey, can I introduce you to my dad at the very end? She didn't say yes or no, but that's out there too. So you never know.
You never know.
Well, I mean, would you ever consider dating again?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm lonely.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready. I don't know. I'm not, and I have so many good friends and the family. And
yeah, you got to meet the right guy.
You know, and
no, thank you guys for always reaching out, and especially this week. Just wanted to, you know, let you know that everybody's okay. Grandma's in a better place, and Dad is hanging in there.
Yeah, and just thank you guys. I still want to thank you from when Becky was going through her journey and all the cards and gifts and everything you all sent. I mean, over 1,000, and flowers. It was just amazing. And then the cards I was I got a heck of a lot of Christmas cards just to me. So that, and really nice message. People are good, really good.
You have to remember that because there's a lot of, I think sometimes the haters are a lot louder than.
Well, see, that's what I mean. So people are good. You got to, you judge everybody individually. And not judge, but, you know, and people are good. I mean, Becky and I experienced it firsthand. It was just amazing. It really eased her journey. It eased my journey and, you know, and everything. So it was just great. But thank you all. And Kim, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And thanks,
and remember,
guys.
You know, forgiveness too. You know, be forgiving with yourselves. And
Very much so.
Life is all about making mistakes and you know, picking yourself back up and learning from them. Just like Tom Sandoval, right?
Yeah.
We're Team Ariana, by the way.
But anyway, but thank you, guys. I love you. Becky loves you. We really appreciate you, and thank you for supporting Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
Love you.
Bye.
Peace.
So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies. Thank you to our sponsor, Hulu. Their new reality series, Vanderpump Villa, is an unfiltered portrait of what it is like to work in the glamorous French countryside while striving to impress Lisa Vanderpump. As guests arrive for their lavish vacation, the Vanderpump Villa staff are pushed to their limits, ready to cater to every whim, all the while dealing with rivalry, romance, and misadventures. Watch new episodes of Vanderpump Villa every Monday, now on Hulu.
Betches.